We are holding on Ayin Tes Amud Beis, 8 lines from the end, or 7 lines from the end of the narrow lines. Line begins Lakayim. We talked about in the Mishnah about 2 different kinds of men who are infertile, Swiss Adam and Swiss Chama. So Swiss Adam is somebody who was injured or operated on or whatever at one night, after he was born, versus a Swiss Chama is one where he was born with a condition, which we're going to learn in the Gemara today, various symptoms of it that he never physically matures and he never is going to be able to father children. So we were talking about so Rabbi Yeshua had said that he heard from his Rebbeim that one kind can do chalitza, and chalitza has to be done to his wife, the other one not, and he's not sure which is which, says Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah argue about it. Rabbi Akiva says a Swiss Adam, yes, can do chalitza, and chalitza has to be done, because he had shasa kosher. There was a time in his life when he had normal capabilities. A Swiss Chama, not because he was born that way. Rabbi Eliezer said the other way around, because a Swiss Chama can be healed. We talked about yesterday, based on the simonim that the Gemara is going to say, it seems that at least a large number of cases of Swiss Chama are basically a lack of testosterone, and that can be treated, whereas a Swiss Adam, once he was already damaged in that area, then he can't. So now what we were talking about is that Rabbi Akiva would say like this: if the brother was married to a regular Jewish woman, then anyway, Rabbi Akiva would say that a Swiss Adam can't do Yibum with her and doesn't have to do Chalitza because there's an Issur Lav in that case. There's a Lav Lo Yavet Pitzua Dachah V'Kal Hashem. So therefore that Lav would prevent Yibum or Chalitza from happening anyway, because Rabbi Akiva holds that Kedushin are not Tofes with Chai V'Lavin. On the other hand, if the brother was married to a Giyoda, so some other woman that a Pesua Daka is allowed to, then that's what our Mishnah would be talking about. And in fact, in that case, Rabbi Akiva would allow not only Chalitza, but also Yibum, because what's the problem? Okay, they're not going to be able to have children, but so what? There's no objection to him marrying her, because there's no objection to him marrying her, given that he had a Shasa Kosher, given that there was a time in his life when he had the normal capabilities.
Because she's a Giyoris,
and Rabbi Akiva was saying hold like the opinion that says that Suadaka is allowed to marry a Giyoris. We said the other day that Rabbi Yehuda would disagree with that and say that he can't. So then according to Rabbi Yehuda, that wouldn't work. But according to Rabbi Yossi, who holds Kahal Gerim Lo Yikri Kahal, that the Ger, in short, that Gerim are not considered part of the Kahal Hashem, that Suadaka is barred from marrying into, then it would work. So the Gemara says,
It boils down to the fact that Rabbi Yehuda considers a ger or a gyores part of Kal Hashem, and
that's what we said. We said Kahal Gerim Ikri Kohol or Kahal Gerim Lo Ikri Kohol. Exactly. Rabbi Yehuda would hold Kahal Gerim Ikri Kohol, that it is called part of the Kohol, and Rabbi Yossi would hold that it is not. Right. So the Gemara says, Mosiv Rabba. So Rabbi says I have a contradiction to that understanding of it. Abraisa says, Psua Dako Krushrafa, as well as Swiss Adam, Swiss Adam is a type of Psua Daka, but more specifically, that he's not going to be able to father children, Vazokin, or an old man. Now, an old man also, we're talking about, now on the face of it, there's no problem with an old man doing Chalitza or Yibum, because so what? He also had a Shasa Kosher, but in particular, the Ramban says we're talking about an old man. He's so old that he has no potency anymore, so therefore, he's not really able to accomplish anything in Yibum. So the Braisa says, though, that they can do either Chalitza or Yibum. Ketzad, what do we mean? Mesu, v'lahem noshim, v'lahem achim. If such a person died, and he had a wife, or wives, plural, and he had brothers, v'omdu achim, v'also mimer b'nishoseyen, and the brothers went and did mimer with the wives, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, that mimer is the kiddushin that's done as part of the process of Yibum. Midaraisi, you don't need it, but midrabanon you do. V'nosnu get eicholtzu, or if they gave the wives a get, which then makes it that they can't do Yibum anymore, or if they did Chalitza, Masha Osu Osu, so what's done is done. It has the same effect as if the men had been normal. The Imbalu Konu, now on the other hand, if they did the Imbalu Konu, and if the brothers went and did actual yibum with the wives, then good, they were kind of them. In other words, regular yibum was taking place. The point being that we're saying that even though the guy was a Swiss Adam, or to a doctor, etc., nevertheless, he was still legally married to his wife, and therefore the yibum was that his brother does, the regular yibum. On the other hand, Mesu Achin, if their brothers die, but Omdu Hain V'Osim Maimon V'Chesayin, if now the Suadaka or Swiss Adam or what have you does Maimon with the wife, the Nosnu Get Echotzu, or they gave her a get, or they gave her Chalitza, also Masha Osu, so also that has an effect just as if they were intact. The Imbalu Konu, also if they were to have relations with her, then they are also Koina her, because they are, the fact is they did do a Bia, which accomplishes Yibum. However, but also Lakaimon, however, they would be also to remain married to them, Mishum, in particularly in the case of the Psordaka, Kurus Shofka, and Sri Sadam, Mishum Shanem, Allah Yavut Psordaka, Kurus Shofka, Bekal Hashem, because the Torah tells us that they're not allowed to be married to a Jewish woman. Obviously, we're talking about over here either that the wife was a born Jew, or we're talking about that the wife is a geodis and we're going according to the Yehuda. So now,
well, it's just like one night stand and that's it. He does the eating.
Well, essentially that's what it would be. They'd have relations the one time and then they'd be required to divorce. They'd be required to divorce, right? Because the fact is, well, what that accomplishes is without that, she wouldn't have been able to marry anybody else. Without that, she'd have Zika. She wouldn't be allowed to marry anybody else. Now, like this, she's able to go, Yeah, that's what it was talked about extensively in the Masechta. Yeah, we're gonna get back to that point later on. We're gonna get back to that point later on in the next part of this again. Anyway, so Alma b'Kohel Askinan. So therefore, obviously, we can see from this Braisa that we're talking about the Kohel. We're talking about since it finishes off that they're not allowed to enter into Kal Hashem. Alma b'Kohel Askinan. So we're talking about a woman who's part of Kal Hashem, however you define that, meaning that she's a born Jew, or if we're going according to Rabbi Yehuda, then we're saying that she's a Geodis, fine. But the point is, we are saying that the Swiss Adam cannot remain married to her because she's a Jewish woman, because she's a born Jew, implying that we're talking about that case, and still we're saying that Yibum or Chalitza would have been possible. Whereas before we started the sugya by saying that according to Rabbi Akiva, on the face of it, it shouldn't be possible to do Yibum, and it shouldn't be necessary to do Chalitza because since there's an Isur Lav on him, Rabbi Akiva holds that an Isur Lav is like an Isur Koris. And just like an Isur Koris, we wouldn't say, for example, as we have at the beginning of the Masechta, that if Reuven, for example, is married to Shimon's daughter, his brother, we wouldn't say that if Reuven dies, then Shimon has to do Yibum or Chalitza with her. Obviously not. She's his own daughter, and she's potter from Chalitza or Yibum. Rabbi Akiva would say the same thing about Chayvei Lavin. So why? And here, obviously, the Braisa is talking about Chayvei Lavin, because we're saying they're not allowed to remain married. So Rabbi Akiva seems to be saying that you need Chalitza or Yibum. Ella, Omar Rabba. So rather, Rabba says you have to be talking about why would Rabbi Akiva say that you do Chalitza or Yibum? The case would be where first she came up for Yibum, and then she has a Zika, now she's required to do Yibum, and then afterwards he became a Tzuadaka. So now you need Chalitza, because it's true. Rabba is saying, if he had been a Tzuadaka when her husband died, then you're right, Rabbi Akiva would say that no Chalitza is necessary, but because he became a Tzuadaka only afterwards, the fact remains, she had a Zika, she had a requirement for Yibum when her husband died, and the fact that now the one surviving brother became a Tzuadaka, okay, he can't do Yibum with her, but he still needs to do Chalitza. Omalei Abaya, so then Abaya asks, why? The loisi isu patsua v'nidche esed Yibum. By that logic, again, we're talking according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds that when there's an Isur Lav, then it makes Chalitza unnecessary. So in that case, the Isur, that he's a Tzuadaka, should override the Eser of Yibum. It happened after the fact, doesn't matter. After all, it would be similar to a case where we learn later in the Masechta, you have a case over there involving a case involving two sisters. One is an older woman. The other one is young. The other one is below bas mitzvah. Now we have the second one The younger one was not niskadish by her father, where then her kedushin would be valid daraisa. She was niskadish after her father died by her brothers or her mother, or whoever is in charge of her, which then those kedushin are valid only dirabanan, and she can undo them with mir. She can at some point declare, I don't want to be married anymore, and it dissolves the whole marriage. Mm-hmm. So now what happens is, given that the Torah tells us you can't be married to two sisters, what happens if you had two brothers married to these two sisters, Reuven to the older sister, Shimon to the younger one. Now Reuven dies. So now the older sister is up for Yibum to Shimon. The problem is Shimon is already married to her younger sister, and he can't be married to two sisters. So what do we do? So you have a multi-way machloikus in the mission over there, but Ram Gamliel says, listen, if the younger sister does miyun, then good, she dissolves her marriage. Now he can marry the older sister, because now he's not married to two mm-hmm. the two sisters anymore. Mm-hmm. Just turn down the volume.
I can't. I just turned it off.
Okay.
It doesn't let you turn it down.
Okay, that's fine. The imlav, and if not, says Ram Gamliel, tamtin ad shetagdil, then let's wait until the younger sister becomes bas mitzvah, v'teitze al azum shuma choisisha. And now the older sister is potter at that point from Yibum because he's married to her sister. Now at that point, once the younger one becomes bas mitzvah, then her kiddushin are become fully valid daraisa. Well, the next time they have relations, they become fully valid daraisa. So now, he's already married to her sister. Therefore, the zika, the requirement for yibum, goes away. So you see that you have an. What were you saying?
You wouldn't have to do chalitza.
No, so that's the point. In other words, that's precisely the point. We don't have to do chalitza because at this point, what we're saying is now he's married on a daraisa level to the younger sister. Well, then in that case, the older sister is potter from yibum and chalitza, assuming there's no other brother. So we see that even when something happens long after the zika took effect, it can still undo it. So according to Rabbi Akiva, everybody agrees there's a lot of psur daka to have relations with the Bas Yisrael, but Rabbi Akiva is the one who says that kedushin aren't even toifis in such a case, and therefore that yibum or chalitza is not necessary in such a case. So according to him, even if that happened long afterwards, so what? It should still mean that the zika is undone and no chalitza is necessary. And yet Rabbi Akiva is saying that it is.
But what basis for Rabbi Akiva saying
that? Rabbi Akiva says earlier in the Masechta that any time that you have an Isur Lav, for example, over here, there's a Lav that a Psur Daka is not allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael, then that's similar to Chayvi Krisus, Kiddushin are not Toifis, and therefore, in terms of Chalitza or Yibum, it would mean that no Chalitza is necessary. The same way as you don't need Chalitza, where there's an Erva, where there's an Isur Kores involved, Rabbi Akiva would say the same thing with an Isur Lav. So over here, yeah. So Alma, Osi Isur Achos Shavadachi.
When there is yibum, there can be chalitza. If there's no yibum, there cannot be any chalitza. I mean, they go together.
First of all, that's daraisa. We're not talking about dirabanan. But second of all, that's exactly what we're saying over here. Rabbi Akiva is saying that yibum is impossible because he's a psur daka and there's a lav involved. Rabbi Akiva should therefore also, to be consistent, saying that no chalitza is necessary. And yet we're having in our Mishnah that he's saying that a Swiss Adam, Chalitza is necessary, that if a Swiss Adam was married to a woman, then Chalitza is necessary with his wife. Why? So, or vice versa, actually, we're saying the other way around over here. We're saying that if his brother dies, he has to do Chalitza with the wife. He has to do Chalitza with the widow. Why? That's the point. Alma, we see in the case of the two sisters, Ofi Isra Chos Isha V'dochi, we see the fact that now she's considered his wife's sister, because now the marriage, the younger one, is valid daraisa. That pushes away Yibum, that pushes away the necessity for Yibum or Chalitza with the older sister. Hochanami Nesu Isra Ptsua V'nidchi. The same way over here. So what that he became a Ptsua Daka after the Zika took effect? According to Rabbi Akiva's Shita, nevertheless, it should make Chalitza unnecessary. Because now at this point he's also to do yibum with her. Ela Amar Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef says, rather you have to say Hai Tana Hach Tana Dvei Rabbi Akivahi. Rather you would have to say the Tana of our Mishnah, the Rabbi Akiva of our Mishnah, is following another understanding of Rabbi Akiva. D'Amar Mechayv Elavin D'Sheir Having Mamzer Mechayv Elavin Grady Like Having Mamzer. Within Rabbi Akiva's opinion, that Chai Be'Lavin, Kedushin, are not Tofes, there's two different ways of understanding Rabbi Akiva. Does he mean all Chai Be'Lavin across the board, or does he only mean Chai Be'Lavin that involve close relationships? Now we had not with an animal, no.
That's not a close relationship.
We had Udyu in the Masechta that we said Ezo Mamzer. We had the definition that Rabbi Akiva said. What is a Mamzer? Kol She'er Boser Shubala Yavai. Any close relation, any close relation, any member of the family where there was a lav involved in marrying her, as opposed to where there's a lav that doesn't involve a family relationship. So for example, so Rashi gives an example over there. Let's say according to, first of all, we have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, Udyu and the Masechta, that if a man had relations with a woman outside of marriage, then his son is not allowed to marry that woman. It's called Anusas Ovid. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it again further in our Masechta on Daf Tzadik Zayin and further than that. So that's an example of a lav. There's no kores involved, but Rabbi Yehuda would hold that it's still also to the son. Another example, Rashi says, would be, let's say, if the brother did chalitza with the wife and then married her, then there's also only an isur lav. So in those cases, the lav is lo yivne. The lav is that he didn't build her up by doing yivum, therefore now he can't do yivum anymore. But it's only an isur lav. Reuven and Shimon. Reuven died. Shimon did chalitza to his wife. Now Shimon goes and marries that wife after having done chalitza to her. So now that's an isur lav. So now it isn't isur lav.
No, Shimon
was never married to her. They did chalitza. So now one way of understanding Rabbi Akiva is that he's saying that only those kinds of lavim produce a mamzer and kedushin are not tofes. Only where the lav has something to do with the relationship, but not otherwise. In other words, with a psur daka, the problem is not that he's related to her. The problem is that he's a psur daka. So now you have an opinion of Reb Simoi who understands Rabbi Akiva to be saying that Rabbi Akiva would include the other lavim as well, and the only exception he would say is almana l'kohen gadol. But any other lab have lab manzer. But now the Mishnah that we learned, Udi Yonar Masechta on Daf Mem Tes, does not understand Rabbi Akiva that way. It understands Rabbi Akiva to be saying that only when it's a lab of she'er, of relationships, that's when we would say that kedushin are not tofes. Well, our Mishnah then is following the same shita. So therefore we would say he has to do chalitza. I, there's a lab of him intermarrying with a Jewish woman. No, because Rabbi Akiva would say that only if it was a lav that involved relationships, that where the lav is created by the relationship, then you would say that there's an issue. But here the lav is not created. Had he not been a tzurdaka, there'd be no problem with him doing yibum with her. The lav is created not by him being related to her, but by him being a tzurdaka. So Rabbi Akiva would not hold that kind is the kind with kedushin aren't tofes, and that would produce a mamzer if they could have children, and therefore yes, chalitza is necessary. So he says, mechayv lavim to share having mamzer, only lavim that involve close relationships produces a mamzer. Mechayv lavim gravy like having mamzer, but a plain isur lav where there's no relationship involved, even Rabbi Akiva, according to this understanding, is not going to say that it produces a mamzer. Therefore, chalitza is necessary. So they want to ask, but still, why is chalitza necessary? Ikri kan lahokim la'ochim shem. After all, shouldn't we apply the pasuk over here that the purpose of yibum and chalitza, which takes the place of yibum, is to reestablish his brother's name, meaning that they're going to have a child, v'halav b'hafu. And a Swiss Adam is not capable of doing that. The answer is, imkain, Rava said, the answer is, Omar Rava, imkain, if you were going to learn like that, if you were going to say that you don't care about the fact that previously he had that capability, you would look at how he is right now. If ein locha isha shekshev l'yavam, then he would shalod nasa baila swiss chama shah achas todem l'misase. Then you would never have a woman who was kosher for a yavam whose husband did not become a swiss chama a short time before he passed away. Think of it, says Rava. When the husband dies, so if he dies of natural causes, let's say, then his body is shutting down in the few minutes before he passes away, and part of that is he loses his potency. And if, for example, he dies from some other cause also, I mean, there'd be, okay, maybe there'd be the very rare case, say, if he gets his head chopped off or something, where there, you know, his death is instantaneous. But under normal circumstances, you have a couple of minutes where his body is shutting down, he's not capable, and yet, obviously, Yibum or Chalitza is done with his wife. So therefore, that goes to show that we don't care. That goes to show that we're not concerned about how he is right now when he dies. We're looking at how he was earlier in life. He had a shasa kosher, so therefore that makes his wife eligible for chalitza or yibum. So the Gemara said, and so the same thing applies to the Sris Adam. Then at one point during his life, he had that potency. So the question is, knew what we just said, Rava's point, wouldn't that be a problem for Rav Eliezer? Rav Eliezer in our Mishnah had said that a Swiss Chama, that Rav Eliezer in our Mishnah had said that a Swiss Adam, you don't do Chalitza because he has no refuah, but a Swiss Chama you do because you could possibly heal him. But according to Rav Eliezer, we see that he cares about Shasa Kosher. We see that he cares, did the person ever have this capability or not? One second. We see that according to Rav Eliezer, we care about what his capability was to begin with. Because Rav Eliezer is focusing on the question, is there a refuah to him? Now, when a person is on his deathbed, there's no refuah for him. He's a goner. And yet, obviously, the wife does yibum because of the original shasa kosher. So we see. So the question is: so how does that work according to Rabbi Eliezer? If Rabbi Eliezer says the key thing is there a refuah or not? Then a person who's on his deathbed, there's no refuah for him. And the answer is hasam chishusa da aschila be. The answer is that there, Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't call him a Swiss Chama. He would just say the fact that he's dying, that weakens his strength. The definition of a Swiss Chama would be a systemic thing that affected his morning after, that affected his whole body to begin with when he was conceived and when he developed in the womb, where therefore that would make him a Swiss Chama. We don't consider something like this where he's dying and therefore he loses his potency because of that. Swiss Adam, right. So we're not going to consider that. We're not going to consider that a Swiss. We're going to consider that it's not something that's affecting specifically that aspect of his body. It's affecting his whole body. So even Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't take that into consideration. You were going to say something?
Yeah. If a Psilic Daka marries a woman.
Yeah.
Then it seems like they can't have a mom there because either.
Well, right. I mean.
Child.
Well,
if they have a child, then he's not really.
I hear what you're saying. However, no. We learned the other day, for example, we talked about that one definition of tzedakah. We said, according to the Chachamim and the Halacha is like them, if he's missing one beitzer or was injured, so he could conceivably have children. But in any case, that's not the point. The point is not whether it actually produces a mamzer in practice, but whether it would produce a mamzer according to the Bakeva or not. Okay, let's go on. So the Gemara says, Heichi dami Swiss Chama. What exactly is the definition of a Swiss Chama? When he never had a single moment in his lifetime when he was kosher, in other words, that while he was still in the womb, whatever thing went wrong with his development, that makes him a Swiss Chama. So the Gemara says, Minoya Din, and how do we know that? When he urinates and it doesn't make an arch, normally a man urinates and the arches outward, here it kind of, I guess, dribbles out. Like he doesn't have the muscular control, I guess, to make it arch out. So that shows that he's a Swiss Chama. Now that's not the only definition. We're going to have on Omid Beis, we're going to have several other symptoms of a Swiss Chama. But right now, Abaya is saying this one is pretty dispositive. Okay, the Gemara says, Mimai Havoi, what causes such a thing? What causes a problem like that in the baby's development? When his mother, while she was pregnant with him, baked during the middle of the day, so then the combination of the heat of the oven and the heat of the day can badly affect the baby. The shasya shichra marta, and she drinks beer, which is marta. Rashi has two explanations. One is that it means diluted. The other is that it means strong. But in any case, those kinds of things can affect the baby's development badly. Again, like we talked about yesterday, you know, in terms of the symptoms that the Gemara is saying, it seems that it might either be a lack of testosterone, or it might be some kind of abnormality involving the chromosomes, such as, for example, something which is called in modern medical literature Klinefelter syndrome, where he has two X's and a Y instead of a normal man has one X and one Y. Whatever. Amrav Yosef, Heiner Shmaina Le'imi. This explains, says Rabbi Yosef, what I once heard my mother say, the Omar that she said, or maybe it could be Le'imi, my mother, or it could be La'ami, it could be that he's saying that I heard Rabbi Ami, the Omar, Kol Shemim E'imai Lokui, that the definition of that there's something in Halacha where a person was damaged by the when he first came out of the womb, V'lo Yadayna, my knee, when I didn't know what it was, now I understand. So Rashi says two explanations. I never understood what could cause such a thing. Now we said, because his mother baked during the heat of the day, etc. Or the other explanation Rashi says is I heard a statement, Kol Shem Eimei Lucky, and I didn't know what relevance that is, where that's relevant to in Halacha. Now I understand that is the definition of a Sriskava. Okay, so they want to ask, but how do we know that given that according to Rabbi Eliezer, and according to both Rabbi Akiva and according to Rabbi Akiva, which the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, the key thing is, did he ever have a shasa kosher? Was there ever a time when he had normal male capabilities? Well, isn't there the possibility that maybe fine, he was born in that way, and then afterwards he improved, and then afterwards he deteriorated again. So how do you know maybe in between there was a time when he had, where maybe there was a time in between when he had Shasa Kosher? The answer is given to philosopher Sophie, Lokri Lokashim. No, because since he was damaged at the beginning, and we see later in life, he also has the same thing. We're not concerned that he might have improved in the middle. And we go according to the fact that at the beginning and at the end, he was a Sriskama, so we assume that he remained that way his whole life. So the Gemara says, Mosiv Rav Mori, but Rav Mori says, what are you talking about? I have a contradiction to that. I have a case where we do have to be concerned that something got improved in the middle. Namely, you have a case in Bechoros, it talks about over there about the various mumim that make an animal possible for a korban. One of them is where the animal has mayim akvoyim, its eyes are constantly tearing. And so, and how do we do it? So we have to put it under evaluation for 80 days. And Rav Chanina ben Antignas, we have to check the animal 3 times during that 80 days and see whether the condition improved. And only if we find, when we checked it on the 27th day and the 54th and then on the 80th, and we find that all 3 times it has this mayim akvoyim, and the Mishnah also mentions a number of other details that you have to do to try to cure the animal, then you know that it's a mum kavua. But in other words, the point is, you don't say, because at the beginning it had that, and at the end it had that, then we know that it had it throughout the time. You have to check it several times. So why don't we say the same thing over here? The answer is, l'chad eber chayshinan, l'kulay gufa l'chayshinan. The answer is, when it comes to one limb of the animal, there we're talking about the eyes. Maybe this condition of mayim akvoyim went away, so therefore we have to check it repeatedly. But for the whole body, we're here, the effect of being a Sriskama affects various things in the whole body. We just said before that it mentioned that only one thing, that he urinates and it doesn't make a scream, it doesn't make an arch, but we're going to see on Amud Beis several other simonim of a Sriskama. So in general, that condition affects his whole body, which again, you know, we can understand whether we're talking about something involving testosterone or whether we're talking about something involving chromosomes, then yeah, it's going to affect many different parts of the body. So like I shouldn't, we're not concerned that maybe that healed spontaneously and then deteriorated again. So therefore, yes, if we know that he was born a Sriskama, and the doctors evaluated him at the time and found that, and we find later in life he still has that condition, we're not going to assume that in between maybe he had a Shasa Kosher. Okay. So the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Eliezer had said the opposite of Rabbi Akiva, that a Sriskama can do Chalitza, and Chalitza has to be done to his wife. He never had a Shasa Kosher, because he says, because a Swiss hammer could conceivably be healed, as opposed to a Swiss Adam that not. So the Gemara says, Urimini. Now I have a contradiction, so you're telling me, Rabbi Eliezer, that a Swiss hammer, has the normal dinim, and therefore Chalitza is done with his wife, or he does Chalitza with his brother's wife. But a Braisa says, Ben Esrim Shana V'lahevi Shtei Cyrus, if a man has reached 20 years old and he still doesn't have Shtei Cyrus, he doesn't have 2 pubic hairs, which is the sign in Halacha that he's physically maturing, Yavir Raya Shu Ben Esrim, then you have to bring proof that he's actually 20 years old, Vuhu Asoris, and then that's the definition of Asoris, Loi Cholatz V'lai Miyab. Now he does not have to do Chalitza, and he cannot do Yibum, because again, the purpose of Chalitza and Yibum is to have children, and he's not going to be able to. Similarly, Bas Esri, by the way, when we say 20 years old, by the way, the Gemara elsewhere talks about that it doesn't have to be actually full 20 years old. It means there's something involving 30 days there. And there's Machloekas, the Rambam and the Ravid. Do we mean the Rambam holds it means when they reach 30 days before their 20th birthday, and the Ravid holds it means when they hold that it means when they reach 30 days after their 19th birthday. Whatever the case, anyway, similarly, Bas Esrim Vloyavir Shtei Cyrus, similarly, if you have a woman who did not develop Shtei Cyrus, who was 20 years old and did not develop Shtei Cyrus, Yavir Raya Shi Bas Esrim, again, we should bring proof that she's 20 years old, Vihi Hailonis, and now you know, she meets the definition of an Hailonis, Lois Chalitzis, Vloyavis Yavemis, then she does not require Chalitza, and she cannot be married in Yibum for the same reason, because the Pasuk's over, actually based on a different word in the Pasuk over there, that says that it has to be that she's capable of having children.
Why it seems that it's 12 or 13 years old.
12 or 13 is the normal age when a person develops pubic hair. But we're saying that in this case, sometimes it happens, it's delayed. Sometimes a person matures later. But if they reach 20 or close to 20 or whatever, and they still haven't developed, then yeah. But wait, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that further later. Yeah, Dibre Vesimo. So Vesimo says the cutoff age is 20. Or Veshama and Zevazed Bnei Shmona Esrei. Veshama says the cutoff age is not 20 years, but 18 years. Rabbi Eliezer says, in between, Hazocha Kedivir Vesimo, with a boy you go according to Vesimo, 20. Or when Keba Kedivir Veshama, when it comes to a girl, you go according to Veshama, and it's 20. Bnei Shal Isham Laheres, Lovi Lefnei Ish. Because a woman usually matures faster than a man. So, the point is that Rabbi Eliezer is agreeing with the dinim in this braisa, or it's Mishnah actually, and says that if he is a Swiss Chama, then he cannot do Chalitza, whereas in our Mishnah he said that he could, because he could be healed. So all he's arguing on is the age, but he agrees with the basic concept. So the answer is, Amar Rami Bar Dikuli, Amar Shmuel, Chazer by Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. You're right. Our Mishnah contradicts that other statement of Rabbi Eliezer, so Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. Well, the question is, which statement did he change his mind and retract? Toshma, the Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, we learn in a Braisa, that Rabbi Eliezer says, Swiss Chama Cholitz V'Cholitzim L'Ishtoi. You know why Swiss Chama can do Chalitza, and why Chalitza has to be done for his wife? Shekein B'Minon V'Srafin V'Alexandria Shemitzrayim. Because such people can be healed in Alexandria in Egypt. Alexandria in those days was like the MIT or like the Johns Hopkins of those times. All the experts and all the medical experts and all the inventors and scientists or whatever, not all, but whatever, a substantial number of them were over there. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, if you go to Alexandria, you'll find the expert doctors over there where they know how to cure Swiss Adam. Maybe we're talking about, maybe they figured out the concept that he had low testosterone and they knew to give him supplements of it. Whatever the case, the point is that Rabbi Eliezer gives a clear reason. So that agrees with what he said in our Mishnah. So that shows, first of all, Rashi says it means you have two against one. You have our Mishnah as well as this Braisa about Alexandria that we just quoted. So those win out over the one Braisa where Rabbi Eliezer seems to be saying the opposite. Besides that, also Rashi says, given that he's mentioning an actual case history where you see that such people can be healed in Alexandria, that means that he must have changed his mind and said that the Swiss Adam is not. In fact, barred from Chalitza or Yibum, Swiss Chama rather, because he could be healed. So in other words, in our Mishnah, when he says Shiyash Lo Rafua, he may just be saying by Svarim. It's logical to assume that a Swiss Adam, there's probably something you can do for him. But here in this last Braisa that we quoted, he's saying it's not just logical, we actually see cases, we can actually find case histories where they healed such people in Alexandria, so that shows that that represents his final opinion. So it means he changed his mind about the previous Mishnah, when he said that a Swiss Loi Cholitz Loi Miyabim, he changed his mind about that and decided, after all, that a Swiss Chama, which is what we're talking about over there, in fact could do Chalitza and Yibum can be done. Okay. Rabbi Lazar Omer LaOlam LaFadavei. Rabbi Lazar says a different answer. You could say Rabbi Eliezer never changed his mind. He's not contradicting himself. Because the Braisa about 18 or 20 years old, he's not mainly when he says that a boy becomes a Sris at 20, if he doesn't have Shtei Sairis and a Gurul at 18, he's not talking about regarding Chalitza. It's true we mentioned in the Braisa, L'cholitz v'lebi yavim, he's not necessarily agreeing with that part. What he's saying is that there's a relevance, when is he considered a gadol in terms of being chayav for the punishments in the Torah? For example, if he were to eat chaylev or do anything else that makes him chayav a korban or some other penalty, we don't do that when he's a katan. We only do that when he's a gadol. So now Rabbi Eliezer would be saying, you should know that if he's a boy, then we consider him to, since he didn't develop Shtei Sairis, we consider him to be a katan until he's 20. Whereas with a girl in the same scenario, we consider her to be a gdola at 18. But not that he's talking about as far as chalitza and yibum, he may well still hold, like he says in our Mishnah, that chalitza and yibum anyway could be done because yeshlo refuah, because you could take him to Alexandria and get him and get him healed over there. Okay. So now this brings us to a discussion. Itmar. Ocho chaylev ben 12 shana v'yem echad ad ben 8 esrei. Suppose a person ate chaylev or did any other kind of iser between 12 years old and 18 years old. Now, when we're saying 12 years old, Tosfos says we have to be talking about a girl because a boy becomes bar mitzvah only, or becomes a gadol usually only at 13. Therefore, Tosfos says we'd be talking about a girl. On the other hand, that Ramban says maybe not necessarily. The Gemara discusses in some places toich hazman. Would we consider that maybe if the boy develops Shtei Sairis between 12 and 13 years old, is that already enough to make him a gadol? Usually we would say 13 is the normal age when he develops them, but maybe our Gemara is going into an opinion that if he develops them between 12 and 13. Anyway, so he ate chaylev sometime between 12 years and 18 years old. Then know that by Simone Swiss, later on, after he turns 18, we find the Simone Swiss in him. We find that he didn't develop Shtei Sairis and he developed the various symptoms that we're going to be saying that we said before and that we're going to say later of a Swiss. And then and only then later on he developed Shtei Sairis, which shows therefore that his development was just delayed. So Rav Amanasa Soris Amafreya. So Rav says he becomes a soris retroactively, because what we say is, it means, in other words, that since now that he developed the Shtei Sairis, then we don't say that it means that up until now he was a cotton. We say that he did at some point become a soris. Now, later on, he developed hair. Okay, so he was healed or, you know, whatever it has happened that his body improved and now he's able to, and then now he's developing hair and so forth normally. But, nevertheless, between those eight, it shows that as of 12 years old, retroactively, he was a soris, and therefore it would mean that he's not chayev for the chayla that he ate because he was a cotton at the time. Or Shmuel says that he was a katan at that time, meaning we only consider him to be a gadol from 18 years old. Only once he reaches 18 and doesn't develop Shtei Sairis do we consider him a gadol. So therefore Shmuel would say whether later on he develops Shtei Sairis or not, until he's 18 he's considered a katan. Rav would say that from 12, actually, it turns out retroactively that all along from 12, he or she was already a soris, and therefore is going to be chayav for the chaylev they ate. We don't say, in other words, that we see that after 18 they develop Shtei Sairis, therefore now they become a gadol, and that means up until that point they were cotton. No, Rav says, given that they reached 18 without Shtei Sairis, it means that retroactively, all the way back to 12 years old, they were already considered a gadol, and therefore they'd be chayav for the chaylev, and Shmuel says that not. So the Gemara says, Mas b'flo Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, L'Rav, now according to Rav's Shita, that he says that retroactively we consider him or her to be a gadol from the age when they would normally have become bar or bas mitzvah, I loinus the Rav Meir Yehela Knas. Now you have the opinion of Rav Meir, which we're going to learn in Ksubas, we'll learn in a couple of months, Bez Hashem, that Rav Meir holds that the concept of Knas, where the Torah tells us that if a man rapes or seduces a girl, then he has to pay a fine and then there's various other consequences. So now, Rav Meir holds that does not apply to a katana. So now, according to Reb Meir, according to Rav, Reb Meir should say that an Ilonis would have a knas because the fact is, as of 12, retroactively we consider her a gadol. So there, and we consider her a gdola. So therefore, and yet we find Reb Meir says that an Ilonis does not there's no knas for her onus or her pitter. Now, why not? If according to Rav's understanding, retroactively, we say once she reached 18 and didn't, or 20 rather, and didn't develop Shtei Sairus, then we consider retroactively to 12 that she was a Gdola, then in that case, then she wasn't a Kana at that point. So the usual consequences for whoever did it should apply. The answer is Omalei Abayim, Miketnusa Yotza LeBeger. The answer is what, because in this case, we say she doesn't go through the stage of Naira. Usually a girl goes through three stages in her life. She's a Ketana, then she develops Shtei Sairus, and then she's a Naira for the next 6 months. And after that, then she becomes a Begeris. Now, in this case, because there were no Shtei Sairus, she goes straight from being a Ketana to being a Begeris.
Is the reason why there's no Knas when she's a Ilonis is because she can't have children?
No, the reason is not because she can't have children. The reason is because that's what we're asking. That's what we're trying to figure out. Why shouldn't an Ilonis have a knas? And the answer is because there's never a stage of Naira. According to Reb Meir, the knas is limited specifically to the stage of Naira. Well, an Ilonis never goes through the stage of Naira. Yes. He goes from being a Ketana straight to being a Begeris. So according to the Chachamim who disagree with her mayor and says that the Knas applies to a Ketana, well then yeah, there will be a Knas for her during the time when she's a Ketana. So therefore meaning according to Rav until she's 12. Omalei, sort of Yosef, was very impressed by that. He said, Kolki Hani Mivi Mal Yosa Yisamur Mishmoi. I wish that all good statements like that should be made in my name. There is in fact a girsa that Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef that you taught us this concept that Mikatnusa Yatzal Beggar. We know in a number of places in Shas that Rabbi Yosef was at one point very sick and forgot much of his learning, and his Talmidim would have to remind him of it. So therefore, according to that girsa, that's what Abaya is saying. It doesn't say it one way or the other. I don't know. Anyway. Could be anything. So, the Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, we see a Braisa that substantiates what Abaya is saying. Eina soris nidin kemen soramoda. Now we have the concept of ben soramoda, where he's stealing money from his parents and he's eating together with a bunch of empty-headed people. V'chola. You have all the conditions that it says there in Sanhedrin. Now if he's a soris, he cannot become a ben soramoda. Lafisha ain ben soramoda nidin el b'chasimas zokan atachton. Because to be a ben soramoda, it has to be that he developed Shtei Sairus. Zochan Atachton means the lower beard. It's a nice way of saying Shtei Sairus. And it has to be that only from when he develops Shtei Sairus until that whole area is covered with hair. Until Ad Yakif HaGid, until the Gid is surrounded by hair. So therefore, no hair, no hair, no Ben Soramur. And similarly, continues the Braisa, the Ein Ilonis Nidonis Kinaira Amorosa. Similarly, an Ilonis cannot be judged as a Naira Amorosa, where you would have the dinim that if she's Mizana, then she gets Skila, where usually an Aisha says she gets Chenek, but if she's a Naira and Morosa and she's Mizana, then she gets Skila. But again, she can't because she's not a Naira. Shemikatnusa, Yotzla Beggar, for the same reason, because she goes straight from being a Tana to being a Begeris. There's no Naira stage in the middle. And therefore, the concept of Naira Amorosa doesn't apply to her. She'd be like a regular married woman, and there would be chenek rather. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Abba, Simone Sris Vailonis, when it comes to the physical signs of a Sris and an Ilonis, which we mentioned one of the ones of a Sris before, we're going to mention the rest of them as well as the Simonim of an Ilonis on Omer Beis, Uben Shmoina, as well as also the case of a baby who was born after 8 months, where throughout Shas we assume that, not after 8 months, but during the 8th month of pregnancy, throughout Shas we assume that a baby like that who was born prematurely is not going to survive. We cannot do anything with them until they reach 20 years old. Meaning, in other words, that Rabbi Bohu is saying, as far as the Swiss and Ilonis, just because they develop Simone Swiss doesn't mean anything. We still have to wait until they're 20 to see to see whether in fact they are a Swiss or an Ilonis respectively. Because it could always be, like we said afterwards, their development just may have been badly delayed, and therefore sometime before 20, or as the Rambam says, 30 days before their 20th birthday or whatever, they finally develop Shnei Sairus. So you can't necessarily say just because you find a boy who's 13 or 15 or what have you, that has the various physical signs that we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, that doesn't necessarily make him a Swiss. And the same thing for a girl before she reaches 20. Now, what do we mean by the Ben Shmoina? That one's a tough one. And you have several different explanations among the Rishonim what's going on with this Ben Shmoina. Rashi says that it means like this. We're going to talk about in a minute that when a baby is born prematurely, we have to look at the condition of his hair and his nails. If we find that his hair is not fully developed and his nails are not fully developed, then it means that he was premature. And again, in Gemara terminology, that means that he's not normally going to survive. Nowadays, they have incubators and whatnot, and the halacha is completely different, but in those times, that's how it was, because they didn't really have a way of keeping premature babies alive. On the other hand, we say that if the baby has fully developed hair and fully developed nails, then we say, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon, that on the contrary, it means he was a baby that developed on a 7-month track and then was delayed and then stayed an extra month in the womb. The same way as the Gemara is going to say later, with normal 9-month pregnancies, you also sometimes have where pregnancy is longer than normal. So now Rashi learns that what we mean is if the baby was born during the 8th month, we don't automatically, just because he has the sight of a tziponov, just because he has fully developed hair and nails, we don't assume that that means that he's a ben kayama. We actually have to wait until he's 20 years old to know that he's a ben kayama. Now, a lot of them were showing him, ask him that. So what are you talking about? You're saying, let's say that an 18 year old, he's old enough to join the army. He's old enough to whatever. But because he was born during the 8th month, therefore you're saying he might still be considered a nasal? What's the law there? So to answer Rashi, you could say maybe Rashi doesn't mean that he'd be a nafel. Maybe you could say that he has a chazaka, maybe of being a treifa until he reaches 20 years old. And then if he reaches 20 years old, then we know that he's not a treifa either. But different Rishonim, because of that, different Rishonim have different understandings of the Gemara over here, as well as different Gersois over here. First of all, are we talking about a Ben Shmoina that was born with fully developed hair and nails or not? So there's a number of different explanations. One of them is that one explanation, the Baal Amar says that what it means, all we're saying is the simonim of a Swiss that we're going to talk about later, that includes incompletely developed hair and incompletely developed nails, we're saying those are the same as the simonim of an 8-month baby. Or vice versa. Those simonim that show that a baby is premature, those also show that a person is a Swiss. So that's why we're mentioning him in the same breath as the other ones. Then the Ramban explains that what we mean is that the child, because he was born prematurely, he may develop slower than other babies, and therefore only when he reaches 20 years old can we say that he's a Swiss. In other words, a normal child, we would say once he develops Simone Swiss after 12 or 13 years old, then we can say he's a Swiss or an Ilonis. But if he was born prematurely, then we wouldn't say that, because the fact that he was born prematurely, meaning that his development is slower than normal, it may well take him until he's 20 years old before he develops Shnei Sairus, and therefore we can't necessarily assume that he's a Swiss or she's an Ilonis until they reach 20 years old. And then that was the Raivet's explanation. Then the Ramban has another explanation. He says that what it means is, what the Gemara is saying is, you can't necessarily rely on the Simon. When you see a baby that was born in the 8th month, you can't necessarily say as a given, because he has complete hair and nails, then it means that he's a ben kayama. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. And vice versa, if he doesn't have them, doesn't show that he's a nafel. The same way, Rabbi Bohu was saying that the same thing with a Swiss and an Ilonis, just because they have the physical symptom is not enough until they actually reach 20 years old. So there are several different ways of understanding this line of the Gemara. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Ben Shmona Mikochai, since when can an 8-month baby survive to ever reach 20 years old anyway? V'hotanya, we learn in a braisa, Ben Shmona Hareu Te'eben, a baby born during the 8th month is like a stone, meaning he's mukta on Shabbos, but also the Taltaloi, so you're not allowed to carry him because we don't assume he's going to live very long. Aval imoy shoycha olav umaniktoi, but his mother can bend over him on Shabbos and nurse him with nasakana because of the danger to both them. The danger that she is going to have too much milk and it's going to be painful for her, and the danger of him that he's going to starve. But we see, in other words, that normally we don't assume that a baby who was born during the 8th month is going to survive, and therefore we actually consider him mukta, which Tosfos touches out the question. In other words, if it could be that he's a bar kayoma, that he'll live long, then there would be no reason to make him mukta on Shabbos.
Then what happened if he died? Her milk would automatically go away?
Well, yeah, eventually it goes away. For a couple of days, she'd have a great discomfort over there, or she might express the milk and give it to somebody else. She might become a wet nurse, whatever. Okay, so the Gemara answers, the answer is that we're talking about over here where his simonim are complete, meaning that he has fully developed hair and nails. So here where we have actually the Rif and a number of other Rishonim have the Girsa that we're talking about Shaloi Gomru Simonov, which leads to, again, some of these explanations that we said before. For example, the Ramban's explanation that even though Loi Gomru Simonov, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to die. We don't really know one way or the other. Netanya, Ezo ben Shmona, what is the definition of an 8-month baby? Kol shalai kol olai chadasha. When the months are incomplete, in other words, he was born premature. Rebbe Omer, simonim mechichim olav. Rebbe says you don't just go according to how many months passed for the pregnancy. You have to look at the simonim. Side of the tiponim, shalai gamru. If you see that he has incompletely formed hair and nails, then it means he was born premature. And then it means that ordinarily he's not going to live very long. Implying time of the legamru. Implying only because they were incomplete. On the other hand, if they were fully developed, then we say this is a baby that developed on a 7-month track. Throughout Shas, we have the assumption that babies can develop on 2 tracks, a 7-month one and a 9-month one. We have, for example, the famous tzaddikim in history who were born after pregnancies of 6 months and change. Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel are 2 famous examples. So meaning, in other words, they develop on that 7-month track, and they were born in the 7th month, and that's fine. Maybe they're smaller, I don't know. But here, since the baby was born in the 8th month, and usually we say that's a problem, Rebbe is saying as long as his hair and nails are complete, then it means that he was a 7-month baby, and he was delayed, he stayed in the womb an extra month. It happens sometimes that a pregnancy is longer.
So then an 8th month, that's like a rock.
Would be the kind where the hair and nails are incomplete. Yeah, a bucky would have to check, right? But that was for example that Amban's shitta that we can't necessarily tell based on that that Rabbi Bohu would be saying that not like that. We can't necessarily. Okay, and the Gemara says, you're telling me according to Rebbe that it's possible for a pregnancy to last much longer than normal, and therefore you have, even a baby was born during the 8th month, not necessarily as premature. On the contrary, he might be a late 7-month baby. But the Gemara says, Ela hoda ovid rova teisfar uvda. What about the case where rova teisfar passed in an actual case history, the isha shaholach bailul of vinasayan, a woman whose husband went overseas and then a baby was born 12 months after the husband left. Rav Tosfa said the baby is not a mamzer, but actually he said the baby is kosher because he held that the baby could be delayed in the womb by as much as 3 months. Whereas if we didn't say that, we would say obviously she had to have become pregnant by somebody other than her husband and the baby would be a mamzer. He didn't say that. So you're going to ask, Kibman, who is that like? Kirebi, the Omer Mishnah? Would that be only like Rebbe who said that a baby could be delayed in the womb? The answer is no. Because after all, Rebbe is only a Das Yachid. Don't the Chachamim disagree with him? The answer is, Kibin de Iker, Reb Shimon Gamliel, the Omer Mishnah? No, because you also have the opinion of Reb Shimon Gamliel, who also says that a baby can be delayed in the womb. Therefore, Kirabim Oban. So now, Rav Tosfa already has 2 Chachamim to base himself on, and that's good enough. Netanya, Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a kosher shal lamed yoim ba'odam and a nafel. Reb Shimon Gamliel says any baby that survived for 30 days is not a nafel, meaning even if he was born prematurely. Now, why would that be? Because it would mean, in other words, that he wasn't premature. On the contrary, he was a 7-month baby that was delayed. So therefore, so we see that Rav Shimon Gamliel also holds that a pregnancy can be longer than normal, and that doesn't affect anything. So therefore, Rabbi Tosfa can base himself on the opinions of both Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. By the way, in a number of places in Chassidus, it talks about an idea. I think it comes from Eitz Chaim that Eliyahu HaNavi was born after a 12-month pregnancy. There's a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about the significance of the fact that you have, we're saying, 6 or 7 month pregnancies, you have normal 9 month pregnancies, and you have 12 month pregnancies. And it talks about, in particular, the idea that Eliyahu, being in the womb for 12 months, that refined his gashmius much more than most people, which is why his body was able to go up to Shemayim alive. You have great tzaddikim like Moshe Rabbeinu who weren't, they still passed away, and their body was buried in the normal way because they didn't go through such a long process of biru in the womb. And then same thing when people are born after 9 month pregnancies. But he was born after a 12 month pregnancy, then yeah.
Eliyahu,
it says in a number of places in the Siddur that he was born after a 12 month pregnancy.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Turn it up. And we learn a braisa. A zehu swiss chama. So what is the definition of a swiss chama that we've been talking about all along? Kol shehu ben esrim v'lahevi shtei sairis. So he's 20 years old and he didn't develop shtei sairis. Even if later on, after 20 years old, or as the Rambam says, 30 days before 20 years old, and even if after that he developed shtei sairis, harei kasoris l'chol dvarav, he's still like a kasoris for all purposes in halacha. The elu hen simonav, what are the actual physical signs of a swiss chama? Kol she'ein lo zokan, number one, he has no beard, or se'orei lokri, his hair is soft. It's not stiff like most men's hair. Of sorry machlik, his skin is smooth. Where Rashi points out, usually a man would not have smooth skin. He usually has hair on his skin, but here he doesn't. So those are three simonim. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Meshum Rav Yehuda Ben Yair Kol She'en Meimer Milen Resiches. Another symptom of it is where his urine doesn't foam up. Where his urine doesn't produce foam, and I guess it's more watery than usual. The yesh emim kalamato mayim ve'ino isekipa. Yesh emim, which usually means Reb Nosson says, if he urinates and it doesn't make an arch, which we said, I don't know what Aleph Abaya had mentioned that simon. The yesh emim kosher shichvat zare doicha. Another yesh emim is his shichvat zera is watery. So Rashi explains that usually zera would be kosher. It would usually be. It has a certain thick consistency to it. Here it's not. Solo kamayim, it's clear like water. So therefore, that's another sign of a swiss chama. The yesh emim kol she'en mei meragla machmitzin. Another yesh emim is that his urine does not spoil. Usually, if you leave urine in a keli, after a while, it spoils, but his doesn't. Acherim, and then Acherim, which usually means Reb Meir says, kosher roishet v'meisek shomim, then besore mala hevel. If he bathes during the summertime and his skin does not, and then vapor doesn't come off his skin. So showing, in other words, I guess that his body is like colder than normal. Reb Shimon, Allah's Omer, another one, kosher koilo lokui, his voice is not the way it should be. The nick of an ishla ishi. You can't tell. It's a high pitched voice, and you can't tell whether it's a man's or a woman's voice. So those are various simonim. Altogether, you have your 8 simonim that define a Swiss. We're going to talk about further down on the Amud, does a person need to have all of them to be considered a Swiss, or is it enough that he has some of them? We'll talk about that soon. The Ezehi Ilonis. Next, what's the definition of an Ilonis? Kol Shi Bas Esrim V'Lehi Bia Beis Sairis. Again, when she reaches 20 years old, or close to 20 years old, and doesn't develop Shei Sairis. Ba'afilo He Via La'acha Mikan. Even if she develops Shei Sairis later in life, Harei Kai Ilonis B'chol Dvarel, then she's considered like an Ilonis for all purposes in Halacha. The Elohein Simonah. What are the simonim of an Ilonis? Kol She'en L'Dadim. Number one, she has no breasts. Number two, Miskasha Vishas Kashmish. She finds Kashmish painful. So I guess because there's no lubrication and because because her muscles are too tight or whatever. Rav Shimon Gamliel Mikolsha Inla Shipule Me'ayim Kanoshim. Another one is she doesn't have the bottom of her, the lower part of her stomach is not shaped like a woman's. You have, there's an area directly above the erva where in a normal woman, that area is puffed up a little bit. It's called, in medical ease, it's called the mons veneris, But here you have, it's not, it's flat like it would be by, it's flat like it would be by a man or by a little girl. So that's another simon of an ilonis. Rav Shimon Alazo, Emma Kosha Kola Ova, another one is that her voice is deep. Ben and Ikeris, Ben Isha Leish, you can't tell that it's a woman's voice, it sounds like a man's voice. So those are the four simonim of an ilonis. So now, it could be talking about something that's caused by a lack of female hormones. We could be talking about something that's caused by too much male hormones in our body. We could be talking about something that results from having the wrong kind of chromosomes. This is something in medicalese called Turner's syndrome, where instead of having two X's, she has only one X, whatever. These physical symptoms could describe any of those. Okay. So now, Itzmar, Simone Swiss. Now, when we talked about, we said the eight simonim of a Swiss and the four of an Ivonis. What's the story with them? Rav Huna Oma Adshiyu Kolam. Rav Huna says a person is a Swiss or an Ivonis only if they have all of them. Rav Yochanan Ma'afilu Be'echon Mehem. Rav Yochanan says even a person has one of them is enough to mean that he's a Swiss or an Ivonis. Now, the Gemara says, Heifet Behevi Shtei Sardas Bezokon. If he develops two hairs or more in his beard, Agos HaGrua points out that there are Rishonim that take out the word Zokon, and they say if he has Shtei Cyrus in the Eira area, Kula Almalit Leplegi to Adshiu Kulan, then everybody agrees that you would have to have all the rest of the Simonim in order to make him a Swiss, because sometimes it can happen. Sometimes there's just enough hormones to be able to produce Shtei Cyrus, but none of the other normal changes of puberty in the body, and therefore, so if a person has Shtei Cyrus in the beard, as we have it in the Gemara over here, or in the Erva, as Agos HaGro would have it, but he has all the other Simonim, then it means that he's still a Swiss Chama. And everybody would agree that you need all of them. The machloekas is if he didn't develop Shtei Cyrus in the erva or in the beard, as the case may be, would we say that one of these symptoms is enough to mark him as a Swiss Chama, or would we say that you need all of them? So the Gemara says, Ela hodu amalu Rabba Baravua l'Rabbanon. Well, then we have to ask, what about, we find an example where Rabba Baravua says to the other Chachamim of his times, he says, Einu beib Rab Nachman, check out Rab Nachman carefully. For example, when you go into the mitzvah, I besori mala hevel, if his skin gives off steam when he bathes during the summer, Esiv le bras, then I will give him my daughter in marriage. Meaning, in other words, that Rabbi Baravua knew that Rav Nachman would be a worthy chosen for his daughter. The only thing is, you wanted to make sure that Rav Nachman is not a Swiss Adam. He has all the other milos that a chosen should have, but just to make sure that he's not a Swiss Adam. Well, Kiman to Rav Huna, are you telling me that's only like Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan would disagree? Because we see that he's only looking for one. And the answer is loy, no, because Rav Nachman, sike dikna habale, because Rav Nachman, in fact, already had little patches of hair on his beard. Or again, Agoyis HaGrua takes out the word dikna, it would mean that he had little patches of hair around his erva, and therefore, so now, even according to Rav Yochanan, you would need all the other simonim to make him a Swiss. So now the easiest one to check is if his body steams up when he bathes during the summer. So therefore, Rabbi Baravua is telling them to check out that particular thing. But yes, it could also work to check out any one of the other ones as well. The bottom line halacha is that if he has Shtei Cyrus, then only if he has all the other Simone Swiss is he considered a Swiss or an Ilonis. But if he didn't develop Shtei Cyrus, then we're saying even one of these is enough. Well, so you actually have a Machlokas Rishonim, who in the end the Halacha is like, and you have possibly spent, not only, well, not so much you have a Machlokas Rishonim, but we don't necessarily have the expertise to tell whether these Simonim aren't, whether these symptoms in fact exist in a person. So many times we're going to say that when a person is in this situation, there may be a suffix whether he's considered a gadol under even past 20 years old. The actual halacha is that if you have a person who does not have simone swiss or simone ilonis, but they also haven't developed Shtei Cyrus, then we actually have to wait till they're 35 for them to be considered a gadol or a gadol. So in some cases we actually say that. In some cases we're going to say that we have that suffix, and therefore they're going to have to be considered a cotton or a katana until that age. But because again, unless they develop all the Simone Swiss and they have no Shtei Cyrus, then it's not always so simple. Okay. So, good. Thanks for everyone.